This is The Think Tank, talking about the major economic, political, and social issues of the week on the Voice of Arizona, News Talk 92.3 KTAR. Here's Dr. Mike O'Neill and Mike Russell.
All right, welcome. Thanks for spending some time with us. I'm excited to talk about this. It's on the forefront of everyone's mind as implementation of Obamacare, the Affordable Health Care Act, is rolling right in front of us. And who better to speak to this than John Slater? John Slater has been a health insurance executive for many years. His company, Morrill Slater Insurance, advises both companies and individuals on their health care needs. He's worked for United Healthcare and Blue Cross, and just because he also went to West Point.
Well, Obamacare, we're going to try to do this just the facts, folk. Obamacare without a political argument. The intent of this show today is you walk out at the end of the show and you will understand it. This is not about whether it's good or bad, but most people don't understand it, I'm convinced. And we hope to rectify that in the next hour. So our guest is an expert, and we have three segments planned. The game plan is as follows. Segment one is going to describe what aspects of Obamacare are in effect now. Segment two, a whole lot of Obamacare kicks in on January 1. And segment three, a detailed exploration of these healthcare exchanges, which are a key part of it. So let's just start out, John. Phase one, there's aspects of Obamacare that are already in effect. Tell us what those are.
Thanks, Mike. Yeah, there's been a lot of things that have already happened with Obamacare since it was introduced in 2010. And really the first part of this law was really what I call insurance company reforms. There's been a lot of changes with things like on your plan designs that people would have, the type of insurance coverage that's available. And some of the things that have gotten some attention that are changes that have affected the insurance policies in general. Now kids, for example, are covered up to age 26. Used to be where they could only be on the plan to like 19 years old.
Mom and dad have a plan. Your kid is not kicked off at 18 or 21 anymore.
Right.
It goes to 26.
That's right. And with the economy the way it was, that was obviously pretty popular for some people, being able to keep their kids on the plan.
Especially when they move back in at home because they don't have a job.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. The other one, it's some of the insurance companies had already made this change, but ones that didn't are not allowed to have lifetime caps. It was very common in the insurance industry where insurance could be limited to maybe $2 million over a lifetime.
Which sounds like a lot, but if you have a kid that has some catastrophic lifetime disease, you could come up against that.
Absolutely. It happens, and that's no longer allowed within the insurance plans. A couple other things would be consistent description of plan designs. Insurance companies have, like everyone else, you see credit card companies, everybody has a different format for how they release information.
And nobody could understand any of it.
Yeah, I would say that's probably a pretty fair assessment. A lot of questions on it. What's happened now is there is actually, it's fairly lengthy, but it's called a summary of benefit coverage. And every insurance company now has to use the same format, the same font size, and really talk about what's covered in the insurance policy in the same way.
Do you think people will be able to understand it now or just understand it a little better?
Good question. It seems like a lot of people still have a lot of questions with it. It's a longer document, and you know, most people just try to focus on the key things like deductibles and co-pays and co-insurance that people are more familiar with.
You sent me a list ahead of time of stuff that was already kicked in. Preventative services was also on that list.
That's right. Preventative services. Most of the plans right now, unless you have what's called a grandfathered plan, and that's a whole different avenue, but that would be groups, companies that, or individuals that offered a plan that there have not been any changes since the law was rolled out in 2010. Those would be grandfathered, and they don't have to comply with some of the provisions of the Accountable Care Act. But to your question on preventative care, on a non-grandfathered plan, which a lot of companies don't have grandfathered status anymore, they do have to provide 100% coverage for wellness, well child care, well women care, immunizations, things like colonoscopies when they're required to be done. And those are covered now on across the board with no out-of-pocket costs.
In other words, there's no copay, there's no deductible. For preventative, it seems to me like the philosophy is let's take care of people before they get sick with preventative.
That's
care.
Right, and that's certainly the intent on that. One thing, though, you know, some of these things since they took into effect, there is a price tag on those. Anytime you obviously enhance the benefits, there's some additional
Nothing's
cost
great.
Impact on the premiums.
Now, One of the things that also happened several months ago, there were people who got checks back in the mail, rebates. Mm-hmm. What produced that?
Yeah, the rebates, it's something that actually took place last year. And what that is insurance companies are required to spend a certain percentage of the premiums they collect on healthcare-related versus administrative functions or overhead. If they show that what they're spending on overhead is slightly higher than the requirements, what's called a medical loss ratio. Sorry for the insurance lingo, but that's what it's called.
It's basically overhead, right?
Yeah. If they really don't set their rates correctly, is what it boils down to, then they could be subject to paying rebates back, and it's broken up in either the small group and individual marketplace or on large groups. So I call it kind of like a – you know, you see a big headline on what the rebate amount might be, but when it trickles down to each individual member that's part of a group or an individual customer, it's usually a fairly small dollar amount.
But my understanding of what triggered that was the law said you can't spend more than a certain percentage on administration, and if you do, that excess amount has to be kicked back.
That's right.
Okay.
And that's not on a individual group by group basis. That would look at an insurance company's entire book of business.
Okay. So the last item I had on your list was direct access for OBGYN.
You
can't go through a gatekeeper anymore, right?
That's right. A few years ago, some of the health plans out there required a person to go to a primary care physician first and then get a referral to an OBGYN. Some of the health plans had already made that change, but others hadn't. And so now it's a requirement you have direct access to an OBGYN. And that was, again, one of the reforms that I said took place as far as insurance company plans.
Okay, that's a quick overview of what's happening. Let's set up the next segment, if we could. You got about a minute to explain to us, what is medical underwriting?
Well, medical underwriting is really how groups and individuals are priced, and there's going to be significant changes going forward on that starting January 1st. The term you're going to start hearing is what's called guaranteed issue, and that means that if an individual is applying for health insurance, they will not have to provide medical questions. They won't have to answer medical questions in order to get covered on insurance. Bottom line, insurance companies are not going to be allowed to ask medical questions.
Because they have to take you.
They have to take you.
All right, we're going to see what else is going to happen January 1st when we come up next. You're right in the think tank on News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
You're listening to the think tank on the Voice of Arizona. News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
We are here at the think tank, and we are discussing Obamacare. What is it? What does it do? What's going to happen? No politics, no advocacy, just the facts, ma'am. And we have with us an expert, John Slater, and we were discussing the technical term of medical underwriting. My takeaway is what that refers to is under the existing system, you want insurance, you fill out a long form, and you prove to the insurance company that you have nothing the matter with you. If you have an illness or prior existing condition, they do one of two things. They either decide not to insure you, or they decide, well, we'll insure you, but anything that's remotely related to anything you've ever had, we're not covering that. Is that a fair statement?
That's exactly right.
Okay, how does that change January 2014?
So January 2014, first of all, insurance companies are not able to decline somebody that applies for coverage. Right now, as you pointed out, Mike, when you fill out an application for an individual policy, you can either be rated up, what they call an increased price, or they could decline you. This is kind of a good news, bad news, depending on what perspective you look at it, because from an access perspective, it can open up the market so more people can get individual coverage because they can't be declined starting January 1. But with that, since you can't ask some of the medical questions, the concern is that the pricing could increase as well along with that. From a small group perspective, the same kind of program takes place. When a small group is applying for health insurance, take a group of 25 employees or smaller, a real small group, everybody in that group right now has to fill out a medical question as well.
Because the insurance company wants to know what the risk is.
That's right. They want to know how to assess the risk. Going forward, the rates are going to be a lot more consistent between groups that would be determined healthy or unhealthy. And like I said, there's really no medical questions that you're able to ask. In fact, the questions that are going to be posed to a small group going forward will be pretty basic. It's really just asking for the age of the people that are in that organization. It's asking for where somebody lives, because there can be differences by geography, what the family composition is. So if it's just an employee only, or maybe they want to cover their spouse or children. And then finally, they can ask if a person is a tobacco user. That's the one question that's kind of medically or health style related that they can't ask.
Now, this is a far cry. Under the current system, you get a pretty detailed medical inventory, don't you? Now, that sounds like something for nothing. All of a sudden, everybody can get coverage. There's kind of a collective price we pay for that one, isn't there?
There is, yeah. And a couple of things that I'll highlight, there's actually more to it, but just a couple things that are going to come out. With individual, with guaranteed issue, one of the other requirements is what they call the individual mandate, and that is the requirement for everybody to buy individual health insurance. And so there are penalties if you don't buy individual coverage for yourself, assuming you don't have coverage offered through your employer, for example. And so that dollar amount starts, it's $95 the first year, or 1% of income. And then each year it goes up. And so there is a penalty for people that don't buy health insurance.
Now, you said $95 or 1% of income. Is it whichever is higher,
yes,
whichever is lower?
It's whichever is higher. Yes.
Okay, so it could be 1%
of
your income. Okay.
That's right.
But I think the point of this is that these two things, as I understand it, are very, very carefully linked. All of a sudden, we're asking the insurance company to take in a pool of people, some of whom may be ill.
Mm-hmm.
Or
that's
sick,
right,
or prone to it, or have cancer in the family or something. Mm-hmm. And in order to make the numbers work for them, they say, we need more customers. We need either everybody or something close to everybody in the pool. Is that the basic deal here?
That's right. That's right. And there's some other fees that are going to be assessed as well. In fact, we're just starting to see it work into the premium rates now, where, as an example, insurance companies have to pass on what's called a health insurance industry fee. So that's additional cost that's going to go into everybody's premium. Now, those fees are going to be used to offset some of this issue that could come up from not being able to do medical underwriting and some of the risks that could come in.
That's also not tied to the fact that, well, we're saying you have to get insurance, but there is a substantial subsidy to people below four times the poverty level. Right?
That's right.
And you need that money to come from somewhere.
That's right. Fair? And when we talk about exchanges, which is going to be really next coming up, you start to hear a lot more on that. I'll talk a little bit about the subsidies and how they work. One other point I'd like to mention is that one thing that got a lot of press here recently were just the employer mandates. So companies that have 50 or more full-time employees also are required to pay a penalty if they drop insurance or don't offer what's deemed affordable coverage. That was just delayed. So that was going to kick in January 1 of 2014, and it was delayed. That starts January 1 of 2015.
But it's really the individual mandate that makes the numbers work, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's really a combination of both. You know, there's the fees that are assessed. There's the penalties for people that don't, you know, that don't buy into the insurance.
You mentioned a health insurance fee for employers. What is that? I think I'm saying it wrong. What is that? And do the employers pay that to whom?
Yeah, that is a penalty that they have to pay, and it's assessed by every employee that works for them. There's a dollar amount. For example, if a company doesn't offer health insurance, they would have to pay. It's $2,000 per full-time person that they would have to pay to the federal government.
To the federal government.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
And so that's a penalty that's assessed if groups drop their coverage. The other thing that's a part of that is that full-time, you know, that means different things to different people. It's defined in the Obamacare as employees that work 30 or more hours. So there's also, you know, there's been some controversy on where to set hours for people that work, who is actually a full-time person.
Especially if you're at the margin. Now, most of this seems to affect either people that don't have coverage right now, or they're buying individual insurance and they're subject to underwriting. But for the largest number of people in this country who have insurance paid through their employer, how much, if anything, changes for them?
Yeah, that's a good question. There are some plan design requirements that kick into place January 1 of 2014. And you'll start to hear this terminology called metallic plans. And so there's really different levels and they cost different amounts. So the one that's the lowest cost would be a bronze plan. And then there's a silver, gold, and a platinum. And they go up in the coverages that they offer. plan designs are going to be start to conform into these buckets that fall into these metallic plan designs. So it doesn't mean that there's just going to be four plan designs offered, but there's going to be limitations in how high, for example, you can set as a deductible. I mean, we have clients that have a $10,000 deductible plan.
Which means the insurance pays nothing until you have something
until
catastrophic.
It's paying co-pays and things like that, but it's a $10,000 deductible. And why do they put a plan like that? Because that was a lower cost plan and they could afford it. So they wanted to offer something to their employees. There's going to be some caps in how high you can place deductible.
I had one of those. We had catastrophic coverage when my wife and I didn't have insurance, but we carried that. And would that qualify? Let's say we were still there. We're covered here at KTAR, but let's say we still have that. Would that save us from the penalty of Obamacare?
No, it wouldn't. If a company offers a plan that doesn't fall within the parameters that are set out, it would be called a unaffordable plan.
No, my own individual. Outside of this, if I just had my plan away from my company and it was the catastrophic $10,000 deductible plan, that wouldn't save me from my IRS penalty?
It could. And we're still waiting for the plan designs that are going to come out exactly on what's going to be approved in the state of Arizona. But it could be a case where that's a plan that doesn't qualify.
This is where I think it gets real complicated. You use the phrase grandfathered in. And
right.
There's some things that you have right now that
you can use and some that you would have to change.
Okay.
Right.
So what else doesn't change?
What else doesn't change? We've talked about grandfathered groups that maybe had a plan design in place starting in 2010. There's going to be situations where they will not have to make any plan design changes that take place. I think what won't change is that companies are still going to be able to get health insurance. Individuals are still going to apply it. It's just how they go about getting it will be dramatically different starting January 1. And these exchanges, which we'll talk about next, really lead into it because those are going to be available starting October 1st of this year.
Now, I've heard it all. California has started their exchange, and they're our neighbors, so we hear about that first. The California exchanges, I've heard the good, the bad, the ugly. It really depends on which side of the aisle you're looking on. Let's get right to the middle, and let's stick with the facts with John Slater. He's here with us to make sense of this all. When we come back, it's all about exchanges. We're going to get to the bottom, the nuts and bolts, the black, the white of these exchanges, what they mean and what they mean to you. You're in the Think Tank on Newstalk 92.3 KTAR.
You're listening to the Think Tank on the Voice of Arizona. Newstalk 92.3 KTAR.
We are here in the Think Tank with insurance and healthcare executive expert John Slater. I want to ask you a question about the current system and a lot of confusion about this. Right now, somebody without insurance delays care, ends up in the emergency room, deathly ill. By law, the emergency rooms are not allowed to turn people away. They have to care for them. They can't pay for that. Who ends up paying for that?
Yeah, taxpayers end up paying for it, and also it's reflected in the premium costs that are that everybody else pays for in their insurance premium, because a hospital for like that, that's the most expensive avenue to treat care is usually the emergency room. And it probably could have been treated at a lower cost area. But if somebody doesn't have insurance, they're going into that route and it becomes very expensive. And, you know, that's one of the drivers on why premiums have went up.
That's a cost of a hospital doing business and they have to pay their people. And if I have full insurance and I go to the hospital, the rates the hospital are charging me reflect the charity care that they have to
do. That's right.
Fair game.
Yep,
okay.
Absolutely right.
That's part of the context for this. Now, explain to me, and then I got to tell you, this is the part of this that I probably understand the least, which is January 1, we're going to have healthcare exchanges.
Mm-hmm.
Explain to me what those are and how they work.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, when they talk about exchanges, they think of like an online shopping mart for buying health insurance.
Yeah, it sounds like IKEA, and that just freaks me out. It is so scary.
Yeah, it's going to be more complicated than that. There's going to be a lot of options on there, but really when I think of and talk about exchanges, it's really the avenue for people that are at a certain income level to purchase health insurance and then receive a subsidy for that. Without getting too complicated, and there's a lot of good tools out in the marketplace for determining this for you, but people that fall at what they call the 400% or lower of the federal poverty level will be eligible for a subsidy. So they can get part of, if they buy insurance through the exchange, they'll get part of that cost. It's an advanceable premium credit is the way that will work for them.
Well, let me stop for just a sure. second, because you sent me something ahead of time and mm-hmm. explained that the subsidy went up to people four times the federal poverty level. And I scratched my head and I said, I don't know what that is. So I Googled it and found a government document that explained what that is. For an individual, it's $11,500. Mm-hmm. For a family of four, it's $23,500. And four times the federal poverty level is going to include a lot of people who may not think that they're in the subsidy class. But if you're a family of four, four times the federal poverty level is $94,000 a year. So the subsidies, which start off bigger for the lower income, go all the way up to a family of four making $94,000 a year, which is not a number that most people think of as being poor.
That's right. That's right. And I think people will be surprised at where they might fall within the federal poverty level when they look at that calculation. The higher you are on that spectrum, so somebody is closer to the 94,000, obviously the amount of subsidy that they'll be eligible for will be a lot less than somebody that's at the lower end of the federal poverty level.
Yet eligible still.
That's right.
Right.
That's
so
right.
At some point, though, I think it's in October you start to shop.
That's right. Enrollment starts October 1st.
So these are supposed to be set up by October 1.
That's right.
Are they going to be ready?
I think they're going to be ready. There's still a lot of questions that are coming out from the exchange. We do know what insurance companies will be offered on the exchange. That was just released here recently. But we haven't seen any of the pricing yet or the final plan designs that are going to be available on that.
Now, I know in Arizona there's a certain amount of companies we can choose from. California, the same. Each state has their own number of insurance companies they can choose from. Is the exchange going to have more? Have we opened the borders with these exchanges, or are we still limited to the same number? We just get them all on one website.
Yeah, it's actually going to be a little bit lower number of insurance companies that'll be offered.
Really?
So there'll be fewer insurance companies offered on the exchange that are available outside of the exchange.
Because it's up to them whether they want to participate.
That's right.
Right?
And there were some insurance companies that decided not to participate on the exchange. Mm-hmm. Now, they may come into it in a year from now or 2 years from now, but right now they're not going to be a part of that.
I'm guessing that's first year in. Nobody has an idea what the risk
that's
is
right.
involved, what these pools are going to look like, mm-hmm. of who comes into them. And they're saying, I'm risk averse. I'm going to bail out of this.
That's right.
Because right now, they can handle that by just having either excluding people or having astronomical charges, and they're not going to be able to do that.
But the question is, let's use here in Arizona, if there's an insurance company in California that here in Arizona we can't choose from yet, can that California company participate in the Arizona exchange? Are we going to be seeing different companies in Arizona, or do we have just the same old, same old?
It's going to be the same insurance companies offered in the state. Let me hit on that a little bit. There's some national companies out there. For example, you know, you have Aetna. They're a national health plan. Mm-hmm. You've got companies like Blue Cross Blue Shield that are more local here. So those two actually will be on the exchange. There's also one additional company that will be on the exchange, and it is what's called a health insurance co-op. This is something, it's an organization that got a grant from the federal government to create a health plan. And that's a company called Meritus Health Partners. So that's really the only one that would be a new name on who's available on the exchanges.
Now, there's one additional difference, is there not, that what this law did is it gave every state the option to set up their own exchanges or go into the federal exchange. California decided to do their own. Mm-hmm. Arizona decided, no, we're not going to do our own. We'll go into the federal exchange.
That's
Is that
right.
good or bad for us?
You know what? I think that there's so many different sides on that argument. I think that Governor Brewer decided to push forward for a federally to use the federal exchange model, and a lot of states have done that. So they're using the infrastructure already created by the federal government. So there's some pros to that. That there was some costs that weren't incurred by the state on developing their own, but there's also some cons that Arizona has to really use what the federal model looks like. And maybe lost a little bit of control over that. So it kind of depends on how you look at it. We're working, Arizona is now using the federal model, and so that's what's going on moving forward here.
I actually talked to somebody in the state insurance department who told me that there was a minor little benefit to them. They got a bunch of federal money to do planning for the exchanges, mm-hmm. and then they decided not to set up the exchange. They got to keep the money. So So from the, there was a little bit of a.
My head's about to explode. Good night.
What else should we know about these exchanges? My head's still spinning here.
Well, while your head's spinning, just a couple other things. I think a couple of key points that people are going to be doing on the exchange is, one, really people are going to need to know where they qualify as far as subsidies on the exchange. So some information that people aren't used to giving out or filling out would be how much they make. We talked about the income levels really determine how much of a subsidy they might be eligible for to offset the cost of insurance. So that's information they're going to have to provide. I guess another thing that's a little bit confused on the exchanges is that that's not your only option to buy individual coverage. You can buy individual coverage through the exchange or off the exchange. Both ways would still be guaranteed issue. They're still not allowed to use the medical underwriting that we talked about earlier.
Now, let's say you have a medium level income, and so you're going to qualify for some kind of a subsidy. And you decide not to buy through the exchange, are you losing your subsidy then?
Yeah, you could. So okay. If you're eligible for the subsidy, you don't go through the exchange, okay. You're not going to be able to get that.
The exchanges are there to provide a sliding scale subsidy.
And one other important point that a lot of people don't know is that if you're offered coverage through your employer, and your coverage is what we called earlier an affordable plan, so it meets the criteria that the government has set, then you're not eligible for a subsidy through the exchange. So you can't have a plan that's offered by your employer and then say, oh, I'd rather go to the exchange instead. You would not be eligible for a subsidy if you did that.
But so most of those employer plans are largely company paid,
and
it's probably going to be a higher level subsidy.
That's right. They'd probably be better off in most cases staying on their employer plan as well. So we're going to see, there's still what hasn't changed is still going to be a robust market in the employer space because employers are still offering health insurance to their employees to keep and retain
and the
attract and retain
and the impression I get in talking to you is that if you have employer paid insurance right now, there may be some niggling around the edges with what happens, but it doesn't seem to me like it's a really big change for people who currently have employer paid insurance.
Yeah, there's going to be some plan design changes like we talked about with that. But the other thing just gets back into how much all this costs. So the biggest thing we're keeping our eye on is just how much premiums are going up as a result of some of these reforms that have taken place.
Well, we want to thank you, John, for stopping by. Dr. Mike O'Neill and I are going to tie a nice, cute bow around this one. I went with cute this week. You know why? Because it's our show. We can do what we want. We're going to get to it when we get back here in the Think Tank right here on News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
You're listening to The Think Tank on the Voice of Arizona. News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
All right, MikeO'Neill.org for blogs, articles, op-eds, and O'NeillResearch.com for, the marketing and public opinion, all that fun stuff. Doc, look, I hear a lot about Obamacare. We just learned a ton about Obamacare. When you take it sounds like a Frankenstein's monster to me. What was involved in putting this all together?
It is kind of a Frankenstein monster. Let me explain to you why that almost had to be.
All right.
Healthcare in America is 18% of our gross domestic product. It's the biggest industry there is. If you're going to do anything serious with healthcare in America, one way or another at the table, you're going to have four humongous groups. One is the insurance companies. Mm-hmm. Two is the hospitals. Three is the pharmaceutical companies, and four is the doctors through their representatives, the AMA. Any one of these groups will drop, if necessary, if somebody comes up with a plan that gores their ox badly, they'll drop a $1 billion stink bomb on any reform that cuts into their income. And any one of these groups could have killed any health care reform. Let me give you an example. 1992, Hillary Care. Hillary Care was going to, this was the Clinton health care
right.
initiative. It was going to cut costs by cutting into insurance company and pharmaceutical company profits. They hired folks like me to figure out how they could motivate people to oppose the bill. And you know what? We know how to do this. Do you think they went out then and did commercials that said, well, Hillary Care will cut our profits? Nope. Because if somebody did that, they'd say pharmaceutical companies.
Yeah, big bad bully
so
profiteers.
Who cares?
Yeah.
No, no.
Yeah.
What they did was they hired folks like me to figure out what would scare people about it. And they produced one of the most brilliant television campaigns.
I remember that.
Harry
nonsense.
And Louise
oh, yeah.
sitting at their Oy. Breakfast table. And the purpose of that was the Hillary Care plan was going to cut into the profits of two groups. And it scared the heck out of people about they're going to mess with my health care. I'm going to lose my choice. So this time, Obama tries to put together something to expand health care. He said, we got four groups here. And we can't tick any one of them off. So the insurance companies, the hospitals, the pharmaceuticals, the doctors, no one of them can be absolutely furious with what you do. And that's the constraint under which all healthcare.
I see that. So the fifth group is the one that gets hosed in this whole deal, and that's us as taxpayers.
They don't have $1 billion.
But do you see what I'm
Absolutely.
Saying? We were the ones that get squashed in this, and I'll be very open. I'm against this plan from day one. All I see, the first thing we covered today, we talked about kids. That was the very first thing we talked about with John Slater, is the kids are now covered to 26. No kid in this country will go without health care, right?
Yes.
Didn't we cover that with S-CHIP? Didn't we cover that years ago? We had the highest increase in tax one product.
That was for very poor people.
Okay, S-CHIP, but they said no kid's going to go. Right. It was the children's, all for the children.
But what this did with the 26 was an upper middle class family that works at, say, Intel, has a great health care plan.
Right.
Your kid goes to college, graduates, can't get a job. What this does is allows that kid to stay on the family policy that you already have.
Okay, so from 18 to 26, those were the real health ones we needed to worry about?
Actually, that's why one of the reasons it could be done. That's a pretty cheap group to add into health care.
Yeah, seems like a no-brainer.
But you want to do it if you're a middle-class family, because if in the very rare instance that somebody like that gets hit by a motorcycle or something like that, it could be. But collectively, it's a pretty cheap group. One more thing, by the way, about the 92 reform that is just hilarious. In opposing this.
Now, this was Bill Clinton's initiative. He tapped his wife.
Yep.
He tapped Hillary to get out there and really make this happen.
And
that's
why
he called it
Hillary Care. That's an argument how much was really him and how much was her. But she and a fellow by the name of Ira Magaziner were out front. This was the Clinton. This was 93, the Clinton
initiative.
We'll
call it Clinton Care. No, there we go.
That's fine.
All right.
It was interesting because in opposition to Clinton Care, the Heritage Foundation and Newt Gingrich in particular said, we got too many freeloaders in the system. What we need to do is have a conservative alternative to this. What we have to do, and this is the funny part of it, what we have to do is have people mandatory health insurance that require people to have health insurance. This was the 1993 individual conservative response to Hillary Care. And of course,
was an individual mandate.
It is the essence of Obamacare, which is why this is very, very amusing.
You know something, here's what I see. And I want to put myself in I think it's probably the best known out there here locally, is Blue Cross. I'm gonna put myself in a Blue Cross Blue Shield position. So the government comes to me, and the IRS more importantly comes to me and says, you are no longer going to cap people's insurance. The money you spend out on one individual will no longer be capped.
Yep.
They are going to have less out-of-pocket expenses.
Yep.
Okay. And no out-of-pocket expenses in a lot of cases, right? You, Blue Cross, you're going to have to pay for that. And if you don't spend a certain amount of money on your overhead versus your insurance, on healthcare, we're going to fine you.
You have to spend 80% of the premiums has to be spent on paying for medical care as opposed to administration.
So I go to my shareholders as Blue Cross.
Yep.
Hey, everybody, we're going to make a lot less money, and this game has just gotten a lot more expensive for us. What do you do as Blue Cross? You hit everyone you have with higher premiums.
You omit one factor, however,
into
that equation. 50 million new customers who are not currently having insurance. The hope is, yes, all those things you say add to cost, except for the requirement to not spend too much on administration. But all those other things absolutely add to cost. What the insurance companies were given in exchange is 50 million new customers, and they're hoping that they're going to make it on volume.
And I'm going to tell you that won't work. Let me tell you from my personal standpoint. I've gone both. I've had no insurance. I had no insurance. My wife and I had the catastrophic that we talked about earlier, catastrophic insurance for 4 years. Now I have company paid care here. We go to the doctor a lot more now than we did when we were paying for it off of menu.
Does that make sense? That's one of the issues of insurance.
So now you have 50 million people that come in that are going to go to the doctor every other month.
That's why you have to have co-pays and stuff like that. Absolutely.
The co-pays, though, I mean, the co-pays aren't really going to affect that greatly when you see the more people, oh, my toe hurts. Now I'm going to go to the doctor. I got a hangnail. Got to go see the doctor. Got a zit. Going to go to the dermatologist.
I'll give you my story.
All right.
I had insurance with ASBA, Arizona Small Business Association.
It was one of the few
places where you could get stuff without medical underwriting. In other words, they had to take everybody because that was the agreement with ASBA, not because it was government mandated. But they started to have what we talked about here, negative selection. So who comes into that plan? A lot of people with medical conditions wanted to come into this, even though your company, this was part of a company, not an individual thing. Mm-hmm. The policy cost for that, for a single person, in my age group this year, and I checked this on the ASBA website, is $3,933 per month, $3,900 a month. For a family, $7,366
per month. Insane.
Absolutely prohibitive. Not very many people are going to pay that. I got coverage through Obamacare, PCIP, which is pre-existing condition, $346 a month.
Right. Who's paying for that?
That's the thing that us from outside
that aren't flag waving Obamacare supporters, we say, well, that's not free.
Right. Well, the big reason why the cost on the ASBA policy went up astronomically was negative selection. So the big deal is this is about bringing in a whole lot of people, if the only people who get insurance are people that have pre-existing conditions and are prone to getting sick can get policies, then those policies are going to get real expensive. The hope is that if you broaden the base, then you average those costs across a lot of people and you hope to bring the coverage.
It's a multi-trillion dollar gamble on hope.
There's multi-trillion involved. Yes.
Okay.
It's a gamble one way or the other.
how many people are going to grab their pitchforks and torches when they understand that subsidies are going to be going to families that make $94,000 a year?
Not very much subsidies, I think.
It doesn't matter. Yeah. If somebody comes to me and says, "Hey, I make $90,000 a year," and the government gave me $100 subsidy, I would still be ticked off.
Yeah. Well, it's a sliding scale.
But where in the world does the people at
$90,000 are going to take the $100.
Absolutely.
Well, the point is where to cap, and we could niggle with the details and say that it ought to be $70,000. And by the way,
I wish they would have niggled with the details before we went into this.
I have the chart on that. Those people are being asked the subsidy at $90,000. They're being asked to spend 9.5% of their income on health care. So they're not getting off cheap. What the subsidy does is it just caps how much they can expend. So they're not getting out very cheap. They're not getting very much at that level.
So the one last thing that was brought up that made my head spin, because I'm an outsider, I look at this and think, what people are getting grants from the government to form insurance co-ops, and some of them aren't even starting the co-ops and running with the dough.
I don't think individuals or private companies got to do that. The state of Arizona did, however.
We just took the money and ran.
I think because I don't know whether it was deliberately intentional. They got the money up front, and then the state had the option of establishing the exchange or not and decided not to.
This is going to be wild. This January 1, it's going to be interesting to see how this all unfolds.
You'll see the exchange plans out there.
See the exchanges, and then January 1, when a lot of this gets implemented, we're going to see, it's going to be like a circus. They just cue the music and watch it go.
Big change. 18% of the national economy is healthcare, so anything you do with it is big.
Thanks for spending some time with us, folks. Doc, always great to be with you. We want to thank John Slater for stopping by today. You've been in the think tank right here on News Talk 92.3 KTAR.